Well, good morning again. Welcome again to this gathering of Galilee Baptist Church. As you can tell, we are in the middle of the Christmas season, or actually at the beginning of it. This morning, as we sang our first song of joy to the world, you noticed that we had our first candle of Advent that was lit. As you look at the candles, we're not going to go through them all this morning, but there are four candles that surround this one white candle, and these four candles represent different things that the Christmas season really brings to us, such as love and joy and peace and hope. And then you have the white candle that's here in the middle, and that candle symbolizes really what the meaning of Christmas is all about. And it's Christ. That Christ has come. So with that, we begin our Advent sermon series. And you may find it odd, you would think, for Advent, for the coming of Christ, we're going to talk about Christ coming in the Gospels. But we're actually going to be in the book of Ruth all throughout Advent. So if you will, go ahead and open with me to the book of Ruth this morning. We'll be in Ruth chapter 1 looking at it in its entirety this morning. If you don't have a Bible with you or an app that you can pull up the text on, please do take the Bible there in the pew in front of you. You'll find today's text located on page 270 to 271. The American philosopher Mike Tyson, or as we better know him as a boxer, once said, "Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth." Merry Christmas, y'all. As we go into the holidays, the Advent and the Christmas season is a time of great joy and of great celebration. But Christmas can also be a time where we feel like we've been punched in the mouth all over again. Because of tragedies that we've experienced in our life, sometimes Christmas can be a painful reminder of those things. Of the loss of a loved one, of an empty seat at the table. Yet as we look at the book of Ruth, the book of Ruth reminds us that even in the middle of tragedy, even in the middle of hard things, God is still at work in ways that are unrecognizable. Though the book of Ruth paints a picture of God as seemingly silent, there's no place in the book of Ruth in which the Lord speaks to anyone directly. We see His hand all over it. In the book of Ruth, we see God demonstrating His faithfulness in unlikely people, in unlikely situations to accomplish His purpose. If you found your faith, your place there at Ruth chapter 1, we're going to read the entirety of Ruth 1 this morning. So follow along with me as we read this text. Verse 1. "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judea went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem of Judea. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, the name of the other was Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and Mahlon and Chilion died, so the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Then she rose with her daughter-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard that from in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughter-in-law. And they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughter-in-law, 'Go, return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband.' And she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, 'No, we will return with you to your people.' But Naomi said, 'Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me.' Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth, she clung to her. And she said, 'See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you will go, I will go. Where you will lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people. Your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So the two of them went on until they became to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" And she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, returned from the country of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. May God bless the reading of His Word. Succinctly, this chapter shows us that even in the darkest of times, hope in the Lord who demonstrates faithfulness in surprising ways. As I read through that text, there are two clear divisions in the literary nature of the text. The first one is found in verses 1 through 5, and it's the story of how Naomi and Elimelech and her two sons actually traveled from Bethlehem to go to Moab. Verses 6 through the end of the chapter is the second unit, or that forms the second unit, and that tells us of the story of how they left Moab to journey back to Bethlehem, and as such, that's how we will deal with the text this morning. In the first unit, we see that when tragedy strikes, we must resist self-reliance. I don't know if you picked up on that as we read the first five verses, but let's tease that out for just a moment this morning. Make no mistake about it, there was indeed a great tragedy in Naomi's life. This book follows the book of Judges, in our Bibles at least. I'll explain that next week. And you see at the end of the book of Judges, of chapter 21, verse 25, the text tells us, "In those days there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes." I just want you to stop and think for a moment. If you lived in a land in which everyone had no constraints and they did whatever was right in their own eyes, how do you think that would be playing out? Well, if you just scan very briefly the last three chapters of Judges, you see exactly how that plays out. There are wars, there are conflicts, there are civil wars. There's the exploitation of the vulnerable of society. Make no mistake about it, Naomi lived in a land in which there was a tragedy. But it's not just that. The text opens up that tells us that in that day when the judges ruled the land, there was a famine in the land. Now, we don't know too much about famines. I mean, even if we experience a long-term drought or whether we have some type of pestilence that wipes out the crops, we really don't experience famine because we can just go down to the local Walmart or to the local Rouse's and we can get whatever we want, unless it's romaine lettuce. I experienced that last night. We will survive the great romaine lettuce shortage of 2018. But you can see that there was a great tragedy in their life. And as a result, they had a choice to make. They could either trust the Lord even in that tragedy and through that tragedy, or they could take matters into their own hands. And we see that being played out in the very next passage. When there was a famine in Bethlehem of Judea, they went and to sojourn in the country of Moab. You know, the irony of this passage is Bethlehem, as I said last week, literally means house of bread. It's made of two Hebrew words, bet, meaning house, lechem, meaning bread. They lived in an area that was supposed to be very fertile, that was supposed to provide for them all the provisions that they needed. It was an area that was rich in resources, and yet when the first sign of trouble happened, we're getting out of Dodge. They had the choice. They could have stayed in Bethlehem. They had the choice that they could have went to one of the neighboring countries. I mean, after all, why not go to Bethel, which is just very close by? It's within 20 miles of Bethlehem, and it's of the tribe of, it's where the tribe of Simeon lived and inherited. Perhaps they could have gone to Jerusalem, which was not too far away either, where the tribe of Benjamin lived. They could have went to Mount Nebo, where the tribe of Reuben went. No, they chose to pass through all of these regions to go to the land of Moab. We have to ask ourselves, why travel 40 to 60 miles, depending on which route they took? Why travel down a 3,000 foot decline and then up another 3,000 foot incline through mountainous territory to go into a land? Perhaps it was because Bethlehem sat to the northeast of Moab and they could look over across the Dead Sea, and as they were experiencing a famine and a drought and things were brown and dry and crunchy, they could look to the southwest of them and they could see in the mountains lush green. We don't necessarily know why they bypassed all of these other areas of the tribes of Israel to go up Moab, but we see that they did, and that was significant. Because Moab, the people of Moab particularly, were not those with whom the Israelites associated with. Now, I know we're all well abreast in our Old Testament, but let's just get a refresher just in case. The people of Moab have somewhat of a scandalous start. Let's just put it that way. In Genesis 19, as God comes down and delivers Lot and his wife from destruction, God tells them that they are to flee the city. Don't look back. Don't turn and look anything behind you, because if you do, you will be destroyed. And we all know the story. They're fleeing out of the city. Lot's wife looks back and poof, she's turned into a pillar of salt. He flees into the mountainside with his two daughters. Genesis 19 tells us that those two daughters began to become concerned, and they said, what's going to happen if our father dies? And then we don't have any children. We can't be taken care of. We've got a plan. We're going to get our dad drunk, we're going to sleep with him, and we're going to have children. The first child that was born was Moab. Moab literally means from my father. The Moabites were an unclean people because they came from an incestuous relationship. And to make matters worse, as the people came out of Egypt during the Exodus, and as they were traveling in the wilderness, going to the promised land, they were being in pursuit, and they needed assistance, and they came to Balak, the king of Moab, and they said, help us! And in Numbers 22, we see that rather than helping the people of Israel, Balak pronounced a curse upon them. For this reason, Numbers chapter 25 tells us how the people of Israel intermarried with the people of Moab, and because of that, God killed over 24,000 Israelites who had married into them. Make no mistake about it, in this instance, Elimelech, in response to this famine, chose his own reliance. What is your response when tragedy happens? What is your response when you experience the metaphorical famine in your life? Or as Mike Tyson said, you get punched in the mouth. Do you seek to flee adversity? Do you seek to rely on your own smarts and your own ability? Or do you rely on the Lord to take care of all of your needs? Because the irony of this entire situation is that Elimelech, his name literally means, my God is king. And if anybody should have trusted the Lord, the man whose name meant my God is king, certainly should have. We see some more information about his family through here. You see in verse number 2, his name was Elimelech. I've already told you his name meant, my God is king. His wife's name was Naomi. Her name literally meant fullness or sweetness. Elimelech and Naomi had two sons. Their names were Mahlon and Chilion. Perhaps at this point when they had sons, they had already become bitter, and there was some bitter foreshadowing of what would happen, because Mahlon's name literally means infertile. What a way to speak blessing over your children, right? And Chilion, his name meant destructive, or kind of consumptive, someone who would consume everything in their path or would destroy anything in their path. You know, I love my children. I don't think I would name them infertile or destructive. Maybe you, I don't know. You would think that the situation couldn't get any worse, but the text tells us that it went from bad to worse, because not only were they here living among the Moabites, but did you see what happened in the text? While they were there, verse 3, Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, she died and was left with two sons. I want you to think about this from Naomi's perspective. Here she was living in Moab among a people who did not care for her, and she did not care for or should not have cared for. Here she was living in an agrarian society in which the chief breadwinner, literally breadwinner, was no longer here. Here she was left in a land with two boys to raise. And who are my sons going to marry? I mean, certainly we don't want them marrying these Moabite women, because that would be in violation of Deuteronomy 7, verse number 3. Or what we saw happen in Numbers chapter 25. And yet, here she was having to live with the reality of someone else's decision. Brothers and sisters, I want to just stop and pause here for a moment as we look at this passage. And just, I want you to really stop and consider where you are in life. Maybe as you've looked at the tragedies that have fallen in your life, which we all will have them. If you've not had tragedy in your life at this point, you will at some point. Maybe that tragedy is because of someone else's decision. I want to encourage you, don't become bitter. Don't become hardened. Don't become blinded by that tragedy. But we see her worst fear became a reality, because not only did she lose her husband, initially her sons married these Moabite women that the Old Testament pronounced judgment against so many times. Deuteronomy 23 says that anyone who marries a Moabite should not enter the tabernacle of the Lord, the assembly of the Lord. And if that's not bad enough, the text goes on to say not only did they marry these two women, but then they died. And here was Naomi left, a widow, motherless, with two Moabite daughter-in-laws. You've got the one daughter-in-law whose name is Orpah. By the way, that is where Oprah's name comes from. On her birth certificate, it literally says Orpah, but nobody could pronounce it, so they just changed the pronunciation of it. That's some edification for you. There you go. Her name literally means back of the neck. And ultimately, she would live up to it, because she would turn her back on her mother-in-law. Ruth's name meant friend. And ultimately, we would see how Ruth would live into that. But even as we look at this situation, when tragedy strikes, we are faced with a choice. We will either trust the Lord, or we will trust our own abilities. And when we trust our own abilities, we are always tempted to compromise for selfish gain. Because that's what happens here in this text. As a result, we need to be reminded to resist our self-reliance, and also not just to do that, but to recognize God's faithfulness. And that's what the second part of this story tells us. As they were coming out of Moab, the author of Ruth is encouraging us to see God as faithful. You see that in verse number 6. We'll not read everything again, but even as Naomi was out in the fields trying to provide for herself and her daughter-in-laws, she heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited His people and given them food. We see here the faithfulness of the Lord in provision. In verse number 7, you see that she set out from the place where she was with her two daughter-in-laws, and they went on the way. You see how the Lord was faithful that she even had a family. Even though her husband and her two sons were dead, she still had a family. She was not alone. Yet she was blinded. She could not see the faithfulness of the Lord in this tragic situation. She was overwhelmed and blinded by it, and perhaps this is reason why in verses 8 and 9 we see that she dissuades her daughter-in-laws from leading her. Look with me, I want to read those passages again. But Naomi said to her two daughter-in-law, "Go and return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." And she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice, and they wept. You see that Naomi tries to persuade her daughter-in-laws to leave. Go back to your people. And we don't know exactly why she was doing this. I think there's some hints in the text when she speaks to them and she tries to pronounce a blessing over them. Verse number 8 where she says, "May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me." Maybe Naomi was trying to send them away as an act of kindness. She knew that no matter how much she could, she simply could not provide for them as they needed. Perhaps that's why she said, "May they have peace. May they find rest." In verse number 9, she was sending them away as an act of security, knowing that she ultimately would not be able to take care of them. Or maybe it was because she knew that they needed husbands, they desired husbands, and she knew that if she went back with them to Bethlehem, she knew what the Old Testament said, their marriage prospects were going to be pretty slim. I mean, after all, what good Israelite boy, what good boy of the tribe of Judah is going to marry a Moabite? Just so you know, if you're reading through the book of Ruth on your own, we'll see it played out next week in chapter 2, but the author of Ruth is so intent on us not forgetting that Ruth is a Moabite because he's wanting us to see how God uses these unlikely people in this unlikely circumstance to ultimately accomplish His purpose. But for whatever reason, she tried to send them away, and they were resolved. You see that in verse number 10, even after they cried and did a little bit of wailing and, you know, lifting up their voices. Verse number 10, they were resolved to say, "No, we will return with you back to your people." But Naomi would not give up. For the second time, she tells them, "No, you need to go back to your people because I don't have any more husbands for you. Even if I were to find a husband for myself and then have a baby today, are you willing to wait that long to have another husband?" At which case, Orpah said, "Peace out." The reason why is found in verse number 13. Even though she had no husband, she was sending him away because she believed that the hand of the Lord had gone out against her. Naomi could not see the faithfulness of God in providing for her a family and providing for her relationships because she had become bitter against what the Lord had done. Friend, brothers and sisters, I think there is a very, very strong warning, admonition to all of us in this passage. I think by example, we have to look at our life situations and these tragedies that befall us, these hard things that we go through. We can either choose to see God working in them faithfully, or we can become bitter. And when we become bitter, our hearts become hard and we become blind to what God is doing. Does it make it any easier? Does it make it any funner? Do you think that Naomi would have been living joyfully saying, "Yay, my husband and two sons have died, and now I'm left with these two Moabite women and I'm going back"? No. But perhaps had she not been bitter, she could have been like the prophet Jeremiah, who even in his weeping and bemoaning the sins of Israel, still saw God's faithfulness even in the midst of. Church, I realize that within our congregation there are many who have experienced many horrendous and terrible things. But I want to encourage us that even in the midst of that, let's see God's faithfulness. Orpah leaves, Ruth is resolved, and then in verse number 15, Naomi for a third time tries to convince Ruth to go back. Yet in verse number 16, Ruth begins what is one of the most resolved and faithful statements in all of Scripture. Look with me at verse number 16. "But Ruth said, 'Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people. Your God shall be my God. Where you die, there I will be buried. And notice what she says at the end of verse number 17. May the Lord, notice all the capital letters, may Yahweh, the God of Israel, do so to me, and more also if anything but death parts me from you. Again, this passage is rife with irony. You have Naomi, the faithful Israelite who should have trusted Yahweh, but yet, what does she do in verse number 15? She encourages Ruth not just to go back to her people, but to her what? Gods. And yet you have Ruth, the Moabite, who should have gone after the gods, saying, no, I am going with you. Why? Because of Yahweh. Because of God. Because of the Lord. Ruth showed kindness because she trusted the Lord. Church, when we think about the way we relate to one another, is it marked with kindness? Here we have a Moabite, an unlikely person who knew the character of God and was willing to show kindness because of that. How much more those of us who call ourselves Christian should be kind to one another. After all, Galatians chapter 5 tells us that kindness is a fruit of God's Spirit. I want you to look at your relationships. And if you truly can see God's faithfulness working in your life, I would encourage you to let that be reflected as kindness toward others. But it's not just the kindness toward others that this passage reminds us of. No, this passage reminds us of the kindness that God has toward us. As we lit our Advent candle, as we look around and see all the Christmas colors and the Christmas wreaths, and as we go from the next Sunday to the next Sunday and we heighten the excitement toward Christmas, why do we celebrate Christmas in the first place? It's because God, in His loving kindness, sent His Son for us. I mean, if we want to see the ultimate picture of kindness on display, it is fully recognized in the person and work of Jesus. When God made everything, He made it perfect. And when we sinned and when we messed up, God was under no obligation to redeem us. He was under no obligation to provide for us a way of salvation. Yet because God loved us, while we were yet sinners, He sent His Son to live a perfect life, to die a sinless death, to be buried in a tomb, to be raised from the third day, so that any one of us who profess faith in Christ and repent of our sin, that means to turn away from our sin, can and will be saved. Friend, if you're here this morning, I don't care how much Bible you know, I don't care how much church lingo and Christianese you can speak, if you have not experienced the kindness of God and the person and work of Jesus Christ, at the conclusion of this sermon, when we have our song of invitation, I want to invite you, I want to implore you to come and let me talk with you about what it means to be a Christian. Yet even in spite of this kindness, Naomi could not see God's faithfulness because she was hurt. They get back to Bethlehem. Look at verse number 20. As the women are asking, is this Naomi? She says to them, do not call me Naomi. Remember, her name meant sweet or beautiful. But call me Mara, which means bitterness. Why? Because the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. She felt like God had turned away. But where you can see this blindness being exemplified is in verse number 21. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. I want you to see this picture being played out right before you. You've got Naomi talking to these townswomen, and you've got Ruth standing right here beside her, and Naomi saying, yeah, I went away full, and I have come back empty. I've got nobody. And Ruth the whole time is saying, but what about me? You see, Naomi was completely blind to how God was showing His faithfulness in her life. Now, I don't want us to miss the big picture of this story. There's a lot of details that are here, and we probably could have delved in and probably have done so more than maybe I should have this morning. But let's hit the big picture and kind of see what's going on here. The first thing that we see in this passage is that God is in the business of using unlikely means to bring about salvation. Immediately in this passage, Naomi was the one who was supposed to be taking care of Ruth. Yet what we see throughout the book of Ruth is that God actually uses Ruth to take care of Naomi. The script has been flipped. God uses unlikely means to bring about salvation. In the future, this is true in the fact that as we go into the Christmas season, if you read the genealogy of Jesus, you see that Ruth, this Moabite, is listed in the genealogy of Jesus. This one who we celebrate at Christmas comes because of this story, because of this tragic situation, because of this punch in the mouth, because of this famine, because of these unlikely circumstances. The second big thing I want you to see in this passage is that God sovereignly uses less than ideal characters to accomplish His purpose. Ruth is a less than ideal character. She's a Moabite. Naomi is a less than ideal character. She's bitter, she's angry, she's blinded, she can't see God's faithfulness, and yet ultimately God uses them in an act of redemption. This should be an encouragement to every single one of us, because if God uses less than ideal characters, we've got a few of those. I mean, last I checked, just look around at everyone here and look in the mirror. We're all less than ideal characters that God uses to touch people's lives. You know, sometimes we don't feel like we're able to go and to do. We don't feel like we are equipped to do whatever it is, but guess what? God uses unlikely people in unlikely circumstances. As we go through this Advent season, one of the things that I have encouraged you to do is to find one person or one family that you will dedicate yourself to praying for, that you will dedicate yourself to inviting into your home, that you will dedicate yourself to inviting to church, that ultimately you will dedicate yourself to inviting them to Christ. What a better picture of God using less than ideal characters to accomplish His purpose. And in case you didn't know that, that is how our church functions. There is no one at this church who is a perfect fit for any position in this church. It's only by the grace of God that He uses any of us. So brothers and sisters, if you often wonder how can God use me in the context of this church, let me encourage you, He has a place for you and our church needs you because all of us working together can accomplish His purpose of bringing the good news of Jesus Christ to the ends of the earth. So what do you do when tragedy strikes? Do you turn and rely on the Lord and cling to Him? Or do you rely on yourself? Your own abilities, your own wits. When tragedy strikes, are you blinded to the faithfulness of God by bitterness, by being overwhelmed by the situation? Or can you see God working even in the most tragic of situations? Because I can assure you He is. When the darkest of times come, hope in the Lord, because He always demonstrates His faithfulness in surprising ways.